This is the Hip Hop African Podcast. They record them live in the Department of African Studies on the campus of Howard University in Washington, D.C.
Hi, welcome back to the Hip Hop African Podcast. So this month we're going to sit down and speak with Ghanaian-born U.S.-based artist Laura Laura. So I found out about Laura Laura's music through her video, her most recent video for Rebel, and really kind of loved the look, the sound of it, and wanted to find out more. And the video was actually directed by Ghanaian artist One Love the Kubalor. So was able to reach out and get in touch with her and was happy that she was able to sit down and speak with us about her music. So Laura Laura was born in Ghana, left when she was about 10 years old to live in Los Angeles in the United States. And her experiences in Ghana as well as in the U.S. have definitely influenced her music and her sound. And so we really had a great conversation. She also majored in Black Studies in college. And so a lot of her music and her imagery are very intentional representations of who she is as a Ghanaian woman, but also her experiences as an African woman in the U.S., as a Black woman. And so it was really a joy to sit down and talk with her about really the politics around identity and this whole idea of being too Ghanaian for, or too African for Americans, and too American for Africans, and then the idea of how do you struggle with gender identity in your music and representing your sexuality in ways that are respectful, but in ways that are honest and true to yourself. So it was a really, really great conversation that we had. And so I was really appreciative of her being able to sit down and speak with us. So the video for Rebel, actually we have a link to it in the show notes, is what we're going to start with the song. So we're going to play the song Rebel and a clip from that song, and then we're going to play a clip from her song Deviant Lady. And then when we end the show, we're going to kind of go out with her song She Thinks She Can Rap. You can find out about Laura Laura's music from her website, lauralauramusic.com. She's also on SoundCloud, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I put all of those links in the show notes. And I hope you enjoy the show. If you have any questions or comments, please, you can leave them on the blog post on hiphopafrican.com, or you can send us messages at feedback@hiphopafrican.com. We haven't gotten a chance to reply to messages lately. Things have, you know, we've been getting quite a few emails. So if you've emailed us and we haven't reached out, please be patient. But you can also rate us on iTunes. And yeah, so we'll see you next month. Enjoy the episode. Thanks.
I'm facing my fears tonight. Turn on the mic. I've been wanting to talk shit all of my life. All of my life. Now I'm 22, so I switch gears. Fuck tears. I know life ain't fair. I'm doing me, that's all I said. All the traditional nonsense and bullshit piercing my ears. You say why? Why I do that? Do what? Charlie, no disrespect, but I grew up, I sacrificed. I bled for you. Now I'm being selfish. I'm doing something new. I'm a rebel. They never see. I feel pain like you do. I inhale like you do. Yeah. I'm insane like voodoo. So make me feel good like I do you. They say she's deviant. Such a deviant lady. I should start experience life. Confident. Remember, what is in the confident? Oh, holy, time for Molly. Heard her mommy and the wee is now out the cabinet. He's so shy that I'm so sure. 99% I can pretend, but I ain't pure. Girls are testing, the best breast contestant. For them is enjoyment, but I say fuck it. I know they get shit from it. I guess here we go again with the feminist view. Make no man come at me with fake antics. I'm grabbing on the wheel. You can hold one day, but they call me picky. Ethno-rhetoric. I feel pain like you do.
So again, thank you for agreeing to come on the show. I guess one of the things I want to ask is your name. So it's pronounced Laura?
Yeah.
Okay. And so can you tell me a little bit about yourself? I know you were born in Ghana, and yes. Then kind of what happened after that?
Well, yes. So I was born in Ghana, born and raised in Ghana, actually, until I was like 10. Then I moved to California. And I've been there ever since. And January was like the first time that I've been to Ghana for a very long time. So, okay. That's basically my story. I've been in LA ever since. So my experience has been, it's been very, like, in terms of identity and trying to figure yourself out, it's like complicated, you know, because it's like, crucial years of my life was like in Ghana and then in LA. So yeah, that duality is also kind of, it also reflects my name and, you know, that sort of stuff.
So then your experience in Los Angeles, because your music, it's not just, well, one is not just hip hop. So I was listening to some of your tracks on SoundCloud and mm-hmm. you've got definitely, a variety of music styles that you kind of work with in your music. And so how did that experience in LA and kind of that Ghanaian identity, but that LA experience, how do you feel that impacted your music?
It has impacted my music a lot, mm-hmm. you know, as I explained before, like growing up in Ghana, I was listening to like Miss Bell. I was listening to, Euphorian Ponsan, I was listening to, you know, whether it was Even One Love, I was listening to, I listened to like local artists, like mm-hmm. I grew up on High Life and mm-hmm. hip, you know, I was also introduced to hip hop when I was in Ghana. So mm-hmm. I really loved like 50 Cent and I loved his songs because it was catchy and
okay.
It was also like, it was very feel-good music that had, like, really melodic feel to it. And, but at the same time, he was also rapping, you know? So when I got to L.A., it was just, like, the land of hip-hop. And, I mean, it's America, you know? You have artists everywhere who are rapping and the radio. You don't hear any African music. So transitioning to L.A. was very much so, like, my music style was compacted with a lot of like hip hop and LA style of music and even pop music and things like that. But at the same time, like the way that I catch up with like African music is through the internet. And I've also made sure that I've like kept up with, you know, the African music scene mm-hmm. and that helped me retain my language, which is Tree. It also helped me retain some sort of like, you know, my African identity. And even though the people I lived with, like, yeah, we would speak Tree here and there, but it wasn't like as often as, you know, I would if I were to be in Ghana. Like for me, it's really hard when I'm writing a song. I know that I'm writing it for myself. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think about, but would this resonate with like African listeners or mm-hmm. this resonate with American listeners? Yeah, so that conflict in itself, it's just so like so prevalent when I'm mm-hmm. like writing a song because I just cannot help but like show both sides and show, you know, my influences. So yeah, just to answer that question, growing up both in Ghana and America has influenced like my music, I mean, big time, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because in listening to the most recent song Rebel, there's a line in there, and I don't know if I'm quoting it directly, where you say, I'm not African enough, not American enough, not woman enough. So does that speak to kind of what you're saying in terms of trying to figure out where you are identity wise?
Yeah, like it's trying to figure out where I am identity wise and also my experiences in LA. Like when I mm-hmm. first moved to LA, I dealt with a lot of like bullying and for being African and for being, you know, dark skin and certain things like that. So for so long, I was very to myself. Like I became very introvert and I mean, at some point I was even saying that I was not African. Mm-hmm. So I went the opposite way and denied myself my identity to try to fit in. But even, you know, even trying to fit in still didn't work. It still did not resonate with myself or even the people around me. It was still phony. It's like, you know, denying who you are. It's just, it's never going to come off as sincere. Mm-hmm. So that even that struggle with like trying or didn't not being very social because of like the just that, you know, treatment that I got, all of that is really what I'm talking about in that line, you know, saying I'm not African enough, not American enough. In terms of the woman part, it's mm-hmm. it also goes with it. It's an intersectional type of thing, you know. It's like being African and being American comes with different values. Mm-hmm. It comes the idea of being a woman in Africa is very different mm-hmm. versus the idea of being a woman in America. So, you know, one of the reasons why people were saying I was not Ghanaian enough was because I had my hair like this. Mm-hmm. Or I dressed a certain way or, you know, behaved a certain way or I was too free, per se. So just that idea in itself of like, what is a woman and having struggling with like, at some point feeling like, now I know, like I reflect on myself and I know that I'm both like soft and hard. I like exude masculine and feminine traits even without me like trying to exude mm-hmm. anything. So it's kind of like interesting because I always felt like I was not the ideal woman. Like I didn't want to like, I mean, yeah, I was perming my hair at some point because that's what mm-hmm. like all African women do. Mm-hmm. But yes, but when I decided to like, you know, kind of face who I am naturally and just kind of like accept myself, it came with a lot of like accepting like things that socially is not seen as feminine. So it felt like, you know, even having this hair, like I see a lot of guys with this hairstyle and I'm like, well, it used to make me feel like, you know, I don't want to be mistaken as a guy, which people really looked at me dead in the face and like, sir, and like called me sir or like, you know, mistaking me for a guy. So that struggle also with feeling not like the ideal woman and not wanting to wear weaves or whatever, it's mm-hmm. that in itself is also what I talk about in that line.
I love it because, you know, a lot of the things that you're talking about, I feel like a lot of us who came to this country at young ages went through that, especially, you know, with the accent. I mean, immediately you're identified when you open your mouth as an other. I think you putting it into words, when you talk about kind of representing your experience is also something that a lot of other Africans who come to this country or come to the US at young ages and get put into that school system. You know, mm-hmm. I remember hearing when the Ebola crisis happened, a lot of African kids were teased heavily, mm-hmm. you know. So, yeah, I definitely, you know, that was something that, again, resonated because I was like, okay, yeah. And so then not woman enough, I was like, wait a minute, because I saw the video. I was like, what's not woman enough? I don't understand where that's coming from. But hearing you, you know, kind of discuss it, and so I think that's kind of one of the other things I wanted to talk about is this idea of femininity, this idea of sexuality, this idea of womanhood. And you mentioned Miss Bell. And so one of the things, I guess, how you feel about the fact that by living in the West, that you in many ways are able to have a certain freedom in terms of expressing your sexuality. You know, I remember reading the story about Ms. Bell, who was criticized and who was at one point physically assaulted. And the, you know, the response from a lot of folks was, well, that was, you know, what she gets for dressing this way, for this behavior. How do you feel in terms of being able to express yourself without really having to face that type of repercussion? Because, you know, physically, if you're in the West, do you sense that privilege?
Yes, I do sense of privilege, but only to some degree, maybe, because at the end of the day, I do have African parents. I do have African family who still live in Ghana. Going back to how, like, women are raised, like, I mean, I was a girl that was raised in Ghana until I was 10 years old. So a lot of my upbringing, I knew what was, like, okay and what was not in terms of, like, how girls express themselves. That's, like, the whole idea of rebel, you know, because I feel like even in my past work, like, there's so much that I want to talk about and, like, express that I always police myself and, like, police my words, because it's, like, oh, like, what are my parents gonna think? And, you know, what is mom gonna think? I always police myself because, you know, I feel I'm still breaking out of that idea that, like, you know, girls can express themselves in this way and that way and blah, blah, blah. But Ms. Bell, actually, I loved it. I love what she was doing at a young age. That's what intrigued me towards her. Ebony just passed. Ebony reminds me of Ms. Bell, but even on another level, like, you know, my generation. I loved Ebony. I gravitated when I first went on her Instagram and I scrolled all the way down and she was like wearing this lace outfit with no bra. And her caption was like, no bra for life. And I was like, yes, like follow. Like, I loved her because of her fearlessness in, in expressing her sexuality. I think, yes, I do have a privilege, you know, but at the same time, I'm not, I do know that I'm not using it to my, the full extent. But the funny story is, you know how I said, like, yeah, I feel like soft and hard at the same time and like masculine and feminine. Like, I love shoots that's like nude shoots and like artistically done, not necessarily like Instagram, you know, trying to pose a certain way, but just like expressing using skin and like lighting and contrast and like colors and things like that. Like, I love that type of like aesthetic. But I had a shoot that I posted on International Women's Day, and it was like a it was like a nude photo, and somehow it got on my Facebook and my pop saw it, and he was like, he commented under it like, shame, like in all caps. Yes, he commented shame in all caps. When my brother's mom, who lives in Buffalo, New York, she commented first, like, oh, this is beautiful. So a whole bunch of people are commenting, this is so beautiful, blah, blah, blah. Then my pops comes and he's like, shame. So he goes and he sends the picture to my mom, and now my mom is calling me, talking about why are you posting naked and da-da-da. And it's like, That sense of always having to explain yourself and explain why it's so important for you to express your sexuality, like, I still have to deal with that. And I know that even, you know, when I progress and I get, I don't know, like, bigger or whatever they call it, perhaps that's going to be an issue that a lot of Ghanaians are going to have. But I think it's so important for, like, women to express themselves in that way. I'm not doing it necessarily for sexual gaze. It's kind of like when you dress a certain way or you dress in a tight dress or something, and, and guys that you're dressing for them, but it's not really. It's like, I kind of like the way the dress hugs my body, and I feel like, you know, good, or it makes me feel a certain way. That is why I do it. And now I also do it because I have passed with sexual assault and like sexual abuse and all type of stuff. And one of my goals also, you know, kind of doing music and telling my stories, also telling that side of it. And I mean, really, my goal is to kind of question what normal is. Like, what is a normal woman? What is a normal this and what is a normal that? Like, how come we don't normalize talking about mental health? How come we don't normalize talking about when women are raped? It's like we automatically blame them and we, you know, say, oh, what did you do? And we blame them if they don't say anything. So it's so many things as to why, like, I express myself in a certain way.
Well, yeah, I definitely think, though, that, like you said, looking at artists like Ebony and Ms. Bell, that that influenced you. And so I think that, you know, being in that, you know, position also allows you to have a similar impact on Ghanaian women in Ghana. And I also think that, you know, right now we're seeing a lot of women across the continent really speak up, because you talked about gender-based violence. And I think that, you know, right now in South Africa, they're having protests across the country. And it was recently, about a month or so ago, maybe a few weeks, where there was this Twitter handle, Dear Survivor, I think. And it was a lot of Ghanaian women kind of giving their own testimony on Twitter to their own experiences with sexual assault and violence and harassment and everything. So I think it's, you know, a really amazing time to kind of see these things happening. Uganda had a women's march not too long ago. And so in listening to your music, you know, Rebel, of course, as, you know, lyrically, visually, it very much pushes back, well, very strong lyricism, but also pushing back against patriarchy and a lot of these other things. And I noticed that, you know, that comes up in some of your other songs, like Deviant Lady. And then the song She Thinks She Can Rap was also, both of those I thought were really, really interesting. And so if you could kind of just say, what were some of the inspirations for those songs?
She Thinks She Can Rap was the first song that I uploaded on YouTube years back when I like got to college. I started like performing and stuff. But that song, I know I mentioned like, Blowjob for Beats, that's not for me. And even Deviant Lady. So She Thinks She Can Rap is people, like when I first came out and I put out that song, I actually didn't have a title for it. I think I was like sending it to people. And, you know, like they would just have a certain like look, and it was really coming from like males. And I still get that. I still have males who try to like put me in the box of being a singer, and it's like, no, I can actually rap. Like I can, like, maybe I can't freestyle or whatever y'all like to do, but I'm trying to say something, and I can, like, I can actually arrange my words to say something. So the fact that you're trying to deny the fact that I'm a good rapper is, it blows my mind, because in some sense I know that they know I'm a good rapper, but they don't want to admit it because somehow it kind of like hurts their ego or their masculinity, which makes no sense. That's really the inspiration behind like She Thinks She Can Rap. It's like people who doubted or the fact that I was you know, trying to do rap or trying to do music in general, and the struggles it is for me even still now trying to find a producer. Like, I'm still, you know, out there trying to find someone that I connect with. But we cannot deny the fact that the music industry is filled with males.
Yeah.
In all aspects. And it's so hard for a female trying to talk about men doing this and men doing that, and you have a man that's directing it, or a man mixing your song, or a man that's making your beat. It's so hard. So, you know, I know that when men, like, I've heard instances where when women try to, you know, assert themselves and be in the music industry, they have to deal with like things like giving blowjob for beats, or sleeping with men for opportunities, when it definitely should not be like that. In terms of Deviant Lady, it's kind of like similar to Rebel, but the thing with Deviant Lady was I was trying to do like a whole like costume, like to, you know, personify this like persona. But what Deviant Lady is talking about is like, you know, I'm saying that I don't want to do what you want me to do. Like, I want to do me.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people who said, like, you're too confident. A woman.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I know in the lyrics it said, girl, you're too confident. Like, you're too confident. You're too, like, this and you're too that. And Deviant Lady is just basically saying, like, yo, I do this for you as a woman. Like, you know, I make you feel good. So why can't you make me feel good?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the same as Rebel, you're seen as deviant. And it's kind of like me accepting the fact that, okay, if I'm a deviant person and if I'm a rebel, then I guess I'm going to be a rebel because mm-hmm. I just cannot live in this world dedicating every second of my life to a man.
Mm.
If that's what it means for me as a woman. So, yeah, that's basically what Deviant Lady talks about.
As you're, you know, talking, like, questions are popping up in my head and talking to different artists, different women that are MCs, is you hear one a lot of the same experiences in terms of men doubting you, men afraid to battle you because they don't want to lose to a quote-unquote girl, or them trying to put you in, like, a certain kind of category and define how you're able to have a voice in hip-hop. But do you think that hip-hop, compared to R&B, reggae, and other genres, does it allow women to be more strong and aggressive? Does it give them that space more so than R&B, do you think? Or do you think it just depends?
Huh. Yes, and...
Well, in terms of, like, okay, so you're talking about in terms of the masculinity thing, the masculinity, femininity thing, and kind of, you know, within hip-hop, there's no room for, oh, I think I'm an okay rapper. Like, there's no room for that.
Yeah, you gotta be cocky.
Exactly. And so, yeah. At the same time, like, in that cockiness, you're not saying, well, I'm good for a girl. You're saying I'm good, period.
Right.
And so you're kind of pushing back against hip hop's misogyny and, you know, and hip hop sexism, where hip hop kind of gives you that platform to do that. And, you know, and this is just a kind of a question in terms of looking at R&B and reggae and maybe other genres, whether or not they also encourage that kind of rebelliousness.
I once saw an interview of Lauryn Hill and how she was saying that, like, she loved singing, she loved doing R&B music, but really she started rapping, which is, like, very similar to my story. I started mm-hmm. off, like, just writing, like singing songs, pop R&B songs or whatever. And then I started rapping when I was in that program in my high school. I saw the guys. It was mostly guys in the program rapping and stuff. And I was like, what? I can do this. And I just, like, wrote a rap.
Mm-hmm.
And the instructor just helped me. But yes, she said that she started rapping because she had more to say.
Mm.
And she had more to say. Just singing did not really give her that space to, like, say and, you know, like, really express herself. Mm-hmm. And I was like, bingo, this is exactly how I feel. Like,
mm-hmm.
this is really how I feel. Like, I feel like hip-hop gives me the space, whether even the space musically, like, mm-hmm. In the music itself, like, when you're singing, it's like you're probably singing, like, one or two phrases and, you know, stretch it out, and you don't really get to say blah 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 blah. Like, you don't have space to really, you know, musically to even say a lot.
Yeah,
and even when you're singing, it's like when you're singing and you try singing deep stuff, it's like, what's up with that? Like, just, you know, chill. So rap and hip hop really gives me that space, and I really resonated with her reasoning as to why she started rapping. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like, does it allow women to be strong and express themselves in a strong way? Yes and no, because hip hop itself has become very, the genre itself is very, like, just like everything, it's good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's very misogynistic, very sexist, very like toxic in terms mm-hmm. of the way that now it's become. It's like, if you're not talking about drugs and you're not talking about this and that, and it's, your hip hop is not really valid. it's sexist in a way that, like, for a woman, I had someone tell me once, actually, I had a friend who's a very smart girl. She's like, yeah, it almost seems like if you're not a bad bitch, you can't make it in hip hop. Mm. What that is, if you don't have that long ass weave and you're not like wearing a push up bra, or you're not doing this or doing that little Kim pose, and you're not doing like overt sexuality thing, it's almost like you can't not make it in hip hop, like in, you know, especially in America. And I was like, yo, you're right. Then there's also the issue of, you know, for women it's hard, but then it's like for African artists trying to do hip hop, it's also a barrier that needs to be addressed. Because in my experiences, when I was getting bullied and when I first moved to America, it was by Black people mostly. And I know that it's like, especially now, I understand that it is that disconnect that, you know, we have when, you know, you grow up in America and they have this perception of Africa, and you try to like try to separate themselves from African or whatever. I've had people tell me like, that shit she's trying to do, mixing African and hip hop, is not gonna work, and especially in America. Like, Wale talks about that. Wale talks about how being African kinda has hindered him from maybe getting to the point of Drake or J. Cole or whoever. Like, that there are many barriers in hip hop in itself, but as for a woman who's also African, like, there's almost no market in America for a woman like me. You know? So, yes, hip hop allows women to have a voice, but it's almost like a limited voice that perhaps maybe women put on themselves to some degree because they want to be marketable.
So then what made you, given your experiences, because you said you majored in Black Studies in college?
Yes.
So,
Yeah, I majored in Black Studies and also Women's Studies, or Feminist Studies, or however you like to call it. And also, yeah, I also did music in school, too.
So do you think that majoring in Black Studies, has that impacted kind of your views on the relationships between Africans and African Americans, or, you know, your perspective on African American communities?
Oh, yes. I actually value that experience so much. I value the fact that I had that type of historical insight. The importance and the amount of understanding that I got of myself and of the world doing Black Studies, like, I know that it's something that's going to really help me, whether in music or even understanding people or connecting with people, interacting with people in general. Yes, doing Black Studies has helped me understand the history of the states, not even just the states, but of Africa and the world in general, ironically.
So one of the other things is, in terms of looking at, I guess, the trajectory of the careers of a lot of artists, is your goal to kind of be one of those artists that kind of breaks into the mainstream of the U.S. hip hop scene? Or is it kind of finding this alternate path that, you know, kind of where both your American and Ghanaian experiences and identities can coexist?
Wow. That's a very good question. Honestly, for so long, growing up in LA, for so long, I wanted to be like the artist in the mainstream, like representing Ghana, like, yeah, I'm from Ghana, and, you know, I grew up in LA, and I wanted Ghanaians to be like, hey, like, that's a Ghanaian, like, in the American industry, and, you know, she's, like, really representing for, kind of like Rihanna, like, how she came from Brussels and she became a superstar and things like that. But going back to Black Studies, that in itself also made me analyze a lot. It made me analyze a lot as to what goes into marketing in America. What goes into marketing in America is race. I was very naive when I was younger in terms of like wanting to be in the music industry, but now I'm kind of like redefining what success means for me. And I think for me, it is going to have to be an alternative route that's very authentic. Like, I am at a point in my life where I just cannot compromise who I am. Yeah. And because I, like, yeah, everybody wants to make money, like, as an artist and and things like that, because you got to live. But I think for me, it's more than just making money, or it's more than just like being a superstar. It's really creating a new, like, normal, challenging what's normal and challenging what is, you know, yeah, like normalized. I don't know if you heard of MIA or, you know, Princess Nokia and like all these like artists, like they really showed me like, wow, you can like perform at festivals and you can do this. There are, besides the mainstream music, there are a lot of things going on in the underground that could be tapped into.
So then what's I guess the next plan? So you released Rebel, the video and song. And so what's next?
I have another song called Fa. So right now the songs Rebel and Fa that I'm putting out is...
Okay, like, wait a minute. What did you say? What's the name of the...
Fa, like F-A.
Fa. Ah, okay. Okay. Okay.
Fa is, it's a chi word. Means Fa. Fa means take.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's, those tracks like Rebel and especially Fa is, really songs that I kind of, it's kind of like me reintroducing myself, because ever since I cut my hair, I don't know if you saw my YouTube videos, but ever since I cut my hair and kind of like went for this type of like natural aesthetic, I haven't really like put out visuals or like music reflecting on how I feel now, because there's a lot of growth that has happened since like the past 2-3 years since I put out Deviant Lady and all those songs. And those songs, what lacked from those songs were like me putting my language and like my sense of more like African identity, right? So Fa and Rebel really has like, I start to use more of my language. So now it's like becoming a priority to where like there has to be something in my songs that like kind of has a African feel, whether it's like using chi or certain melodies or things like that. So Fa is a really interesting song because it talks about like giving me what's mine, because I've worked for it and I sacrificed for it. So it's Fa me die mame. Fa me die mame. It's like, give me what's mine.
Okay.
Yeah, and it features Ifya Swasnega, which I don't know if you're familiar with her. She's this comedian in Ghana and she is very controversial. We took like snippets from an interview that she had at Ebony's funeral.
Okay.
Because in the song, I talk about how, well, send me your obroni, then you hear me speak, then you say, hey, sewi ye bibini. It's like, they say I'm obroni. Obroni is a term used like for white people or people. But then you hear me speak chi, or you hear me speak, and you're like, oh, shit, she's actually black. Like, she's one of us. You they smile in my face like you did Ebony. Like, although we did, like, Ebony, like, you smile in my face like you did Ebony, but when she died, now everybody want to express how much y'all love her. Like, this kind of love is, it's just, like, it smells, it's really fake. So that's really what the song talks about. So I'm going to see how people, you know, gravitate towards it, because I know it has a lot of, like, chi, but the verses are in English. So we'll see how that goes. But those songs are just like promotional songs to kind of like get a feel of what now I'm about to put out, which is like a lot of like fusion of like more of my African identity. So yeah, that's what's next. And I'm also like working on a project. I'm really focusing on individual songs and like perfecting individual songs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like working on new music, but I do have another song that's gonna come out in another video. So we'll see how that the video goes, but the song is definitely gonna come out. Yeah, so
when is the song 5 coming out?
The song 5 is probably gonna come out, I don't have a set date yet because I just put out Rebel.
Okay.
Perhaps maybe in the next month or so. Like.
Okay. Where's the like best place for folks to kind of like keep up with what you're doing? So I know you're on Facebook, SoundCloud, Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the three main places to find you?
Yes. I'm just now setting up my Twitter.
Okay.
I'm not really familiar with Twitter, but I know all the young people now are on mm-hmm. Twitter, and so I'm transitioning into going to Twitter. So, but I'm mostly on Instagram.
Okay.
So definitely, if anybody's trying to keep up with what I'm doing next, Instagram will be the best place, which is Miss Laura Laura. That's the best place. And from like, that's really my main platform. I announce everything on there.
Okay.
So Facebook, I know people are still on there, but it's kind of it's being outdated now. So yeah, like that's why I'm going to Twitter. But my YouTube is also very active. Mm. Like I try to put like vlogs and things like that to kind of like have dialogues and conversations with people.
Okay.
Definitely Instagram.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely include the links and everything in the show notes and all that good stuff. You know, I love having these conversations with artists and kind of seeing a lot of parallels in people's experiences, but then also kind of having these aha moments in terms of definitely appreciate you taking the time.
Yes, I appreciate you taking your time to include me in your research.
Music is a major that will be a family shame. How many times do I have to state it's about the passion and not the fame?
Yeah, yeah,
how
yeah,
often
heard
do you
before.
Hear that saying? I guess by now it's so cliche. Blow job for beats, that's not for me. Him insisting is so extreme. He said nothing's ever given free. Call me a stream, I flow where I lead. Without having means, then still blowing greens. Got me feeling clean, clean as a queen. Bow to my feet and I'm just 19.
Not even 19 yet, but
not yet making hits for the radio. Still gotta play this on your stereo. No bull, this ain't no rodeo.
No shit.
Been through so many scenarios. Wanna bust it open, pistachio. Sorry, I don't pay with fellatio. Cause, same people that doubt me.